the silent epidemic of hearing loss. Some people are born without the ability to hear. Many others, tens of millions of people, will lose their hearing as they age. It's estimated that nearly 30% of people in their 50s have diminished hearing. By one's 70s, two-thirds of us will have significant hearing loss. Hearing loss can affect people in different ways and can make everyday life more difficult. But there are new technologies and systems in place to help, especially here in Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks. From hearing aids to cochlear implants, the Maine Relay Service, and the new Text to 911, we'll learn about the very latest in audiology technology and resources available to help people with hearing loss. And this program will be videotaped, closed captioned, and available online in a few days for the hard of hearing. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio Studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Those of us who can hear take for granted the sounds that shape our daily lives, conversations, communication, even radio programs. But there's probably someone in your life who is hard of hearing. Tens of millions of Americans are. Today, we'll discuss what new technologies are available that can help bring the hearing and non-hearing worlds closer together. Joining me in the studio, Kathy Janelle. She is a speech-language pathologist at Hear Me Now, who focuses on early intervention with children who are hard of hearing. Missy Graziani is a doctor of audiology with Maine Medical Center and a fellow of the American Academy of Audiology. And Terry Morrill is director of the Division for the Deaf, Hard of Hearing, and Late Deafened, and president of the Maine Association of the Deaf. Today, Terry will speak and listen through the interpretation of Maura Nolan and Grace Cooney. Their sign language interpreting is courtesy of Pine Tree Society's Interpreting Services, a program providing statewide services. A closed caption video of today's show will be available within a few days at mainecalling.org. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have questions about how to address hearing loss? Have you benefited from any new technologies or services for the hard of hearing? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome, all of you, to Maine Calling today. Terry, I understand congratulations are in order that you have just been reelected as president. Is that true?
Yes, it is.
Tell me, Terry, I'm going to start with you. When people talk about being deaf, that means different things, doesn't it? Different people experience hearing loss in different ways.
Yes, absolutely. There are many people who have different types of hearing loss across the board. And it really varies. The audiologist, I'm sure, can add on that. And there are lots of deaf people who benefit from hearing aids, others who do not. For myself, I'm profoundly deaf. However, I use a hearing aid for environmental noise. And there are oftentimes people who don't realize that, you know, the terminology used out there right now, hearing impaired, is considered derogatory. We don't use that. So we no longer use that word, hearing impaired. And it's considered, you know, derogatory and a little demeaning. The National Association of the Deaf, on their website, they provide a tremendous amount of information if you are interested in more. And deaf and hard of hearing are typically the acceptable terms.
All right. Well, thank you for that. Missy, I understand that hearing loss is far more common than most people realize.
Yeah, it's much more common. I think, unfortunately, there's still a bit of a stigma, even for people who know that they may have hearing loss in their family. They're hesitant to go and get a baseline hearing test because they don't want that news that maybe they've developed a hearing loss over time. So we end up seeing a lot of people who have maybe had hearing loss for several years and may have benefited from getting fit with any sort of a device a long time ago, and we're getting them now because they're frustrated. So we could be helping a lot more people than we are.
Well, give us a sell. When ought somebody be coming to you? What would be a sign that, do you believe that a hearing test ought to be like an eye test, that once somebody hits a certain age, everyone ought to have one?
I think it's absolutely a good idea to get a baseline, because the toughest part for us, especially if someone has a sudden change in hearing, a sudden hearing loss, they wake up one day and hearing in one ear or the other may be down, or it may be muffled or distorted, and we have nothing to compare that to. So I'm really an advocate of getting a baseline hearing test, especially if you know that you have somebody in your family who has hearing loss. Getting that maybe even in your 30s. I think it's an absolutely a good idea for somebody to know what they're walking into later in life. And if you've had a lot of noise exposure over your lifetime, if you have a job where you work with machinery or heavy equipment, and you weren't the best at using hearing protection, especially when you were younger, you went to a lot of concerts, it's good to know where you're at. And then for me, when you come in later and you say, well, I've been experiencing this for a long time, I can absolutely help. But if you've had a really profound hearing loss for a long time, it makes it more difficult for me to reintroduce sound back to you.
So give us the hard sell. Why does somebody come to you when they first notice a difference? Why not wait? Why not just kind of compensate for a while?
That's a good question. I think people don't really take into consideration how difficult it is to compensate for a hearing loss for that long. We talk a lot about listening effort with people. So while maybe you do great in a quiet situation with somebody, the second you get into background noise or you're facing away from someone, you may be really struggling and you're having to attend to that conversation a lot harder than you would maybe if you had some sort of assisted listening device. So when you first start to notice, maybe you're experiencing, trouble in background noise or at a restaurant, something like that, get a baseline. And then going further into that, if you've had hearing loss that's been untreated for a long time and then we reintroduce sound to you, you can be kind of, your brain has to wake up to that sound, and it's tougher to reintroduce it after you've lost hearing for a long time.
Kathy, tell me about some of the technologies available now that people might not know about.
Well, besides hearing aids, there are cochlear implants that are available for people with severe to profound hearing loss. From shortly after the time they're born, they can get on the track of cochlear implantation all the way up through very older adults. Melissa, Missy and I work together on the cochlear implant team at Maine Medical. I consult with the team. They're a great option for people who choose that to be able to continue their hearing and talking. There are hearing aids. There are also assistive listening devices that couple with both hearing aids and cochlear implants, remote microphone systems that enable people to hear. Like Missy was talking about the difficulty in a restaurant, if they had amplification, they can wear a remote microphone system that brings sound directly to their hearing aid or cochlear implant so that they can hear the person that they're with in background noise.
What is your advice for those of us who may know someone who is hard of hearing? How might we speak with them? How can we be better friends, colleagues, family members?
That's a really good question, and it made me think of what Missy was saying when people wait a long time, and how do you know when you should go in for help? And I think a lot of the adults that come in to see us are experiencing a lot of frustration. Because when you lose your hearing over time, and let's say you're in a marriage or a partnership, you have some pretty typical ways of communicating. You're talking to each other from another room, or you're moving around and you're talking and you're not maintaining direct face-to-face contact with people. And a lot of frustrations arise from that because the person with hearing loss misses things. And maybe they talk up and say, what did you say? Or maybe they guess, or maybe they say nothing. So there can be some frustrations that arise from that. And the things that we can do as hearing people who communicate with people with hearing loss is be like you and I are now. We're direct, face-to-face. you can say the person's name and make sure they're looking at you before you talk to them so that they can have access to lip reading cues. You can close the distance between yourself and the person with hearing loss because the closer you get, the better they'll be able to hear you. You can shut the TV off or turn the TV down, so manage the noise around so that they have better access to the words that you're saying. And slowing down a little bit, pausing, letting the person with hearing loss catch up to what you're saying, because Missy was talking about the hearing fatigue, and when you have a hearing loss, it's really hard to keep the pace with what people are saying and process through all of it when you're trying to hear and figure out what's been said.
Terry, I'm wondering if you want to add anything to what Kathy has said.
Yes, I would. It's critical. Anyone with hearing loss, you know, really the rule of thumb is eye contact. That is first and foremost. At work, I work under the Department of Labor, and I work within VR, and there are a tremendous amount of people there who are deaf and hard of hearing and also have vision loss. And you can come into the Career Center and look for work. And a lot of people with hearing loss think, oh, you know, I did good enough. I understood good enough. And then what happens is it comes to a point of either termination or discipline at their profession because they misunderstood instructions or they misunderstood directions that really would have helped them perform their job better. The other thing, the cause of hearing loss is very expensive. You know, cochlear implants are incredibly expensive, so it's better to protect the hearing you have if you can. And cochlear implants, I just want to be clear, they work for a lot of people, but they also are not successful for some people. And I have several friends who have gotten implanted with a cochlear implant. They're incredibly happy, and others who are not. And it's really important to know that it's not kind of an across-the-board solution, and each person's hearing loss varies so much, there isn't one solution. So, and hearing loss in general, at the beginning, it can be really slow and progressive, and it can be very dramatic and quick. And oftentimes, those people are facing depression. They withdraw from the community. They withdraw from their social situations. And they think, oh, we'll just get them a hearing aid and that'll solve the problem. But it really goes deeper than that, and it's a psychological effect.
I'd like one of you, and you can choose which of you, to explain about hearing aids. Because my understanding, I think those of us who wear glasses have an idea that we get a hearing aid like we get glasses, and it corrects our hearing. But that's not the case, is it?
I'll answer that. It's not the case. It's really difficult often to counsel a patient, especially if they've had hearing loss for a long time. And even if I can make the sound loud enough for them through a hearing instrument, it may not sound clear to them. It may still sound garbled. So it's absolutely not one size fits all. And a huge part of our job is counseling. It's letting patients know, you know, these are my expectations for you. This is, I think, the best that we are going to do with these devices. And then if we get to the point where hearing aids are no longer effective and maybe they were before, then we discuss a cochlear implant. But exactly as Terry said, not everybody is a good cochlear implant candidate either. And that's really, it depends on that person's anatomy. It depends how long they've had hearing loss for. And some of it, too, just depends on their lifestyle, their family support, whether they're going to do, you know, follow up with a professional like Kathy and go and do some rehab after they're implanted or they start using a hearing instrument. So it really varies a lot.
Joining us on the line now, Dr. Matthew Hurst, an ear, nose, and throat doctor at Maine Medical Partners. He moved to Maine in 2008 to set up the first practice in the state offering cochlear implant surgery. Thanks for calling in, Dr. Hurst.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You know, we've already mentioned cochlear implants a little bit on this program. Explain to us what it is. I've heard about them for a long time. I remember 20 years ago when some of the first cochlear implants were making news headlines. How do they work?
There's two components to the cochlear implant. There is an internal device that's implanted somewhat similar to a pacemaker that is completely contained underneath the scalp. And the electrode leads from that device go down into the inner ear inside the cochlea, and they are able to directly stimulate the hearing nerve. The second piece is an external processor that communicates with the internal device and provides the signal and information to be transmitted through the electrodes to the cochlear nerve. The way that this is different than a hearing aid is that with a hearing aid, we're still relying upon the hair cells of the inner ear to detect the sound and pass that information along. At a certain point, we lose enough of the inner ear hair cells that we aren't able to effectively pass that information along, no matter how loud we make the sound or whether the sound is reaching the hair cells. If there's too much damage, that may not get effectively transmitted, and so you get a distorted signal to the cochlear nerve. And this is effectively sort of an end-around maneuver to kind of bypass that point in the faulty hearing network.
Dr. Hurst, Terry mentioned that they're expensive. How much do cochlear implants cost, and do most insurance carriers cover that?
The cost of the devices can certainly vary depending upon which type of device is used and so forth, but I'd say the good news is that they are covered by health insurance providers, both private payers as well as Medicare and Medicaid, including Maine Care. So it's viewed as a medically necessary type of device, whereas a lot of policies won't cover hearing aids. With this type of device, they will often have coverage. But as far as numbers values, I'd say the typical costs, including all of the professional fees and hospital fees and device itself, as well as the operative time and so forth, can be up in the $75,000 to $90,000 range. So it comes out as a quite a big number, but there's a number of studies that have determined that the cost effectiveness, which looks at sort of the impact of the benefits that you get from the intervention versus the cost, has it being extremely cost effective as far as permitting people to remain independent and live safely, independently longer, as well as be productive members of the workforce where they may not have been able to do so without the hearing.
And Dr. Hurst, before I want to let you go, I want to ask you, what's next? What are you looking forward to, hoping will come next for your patients?
There are, I'd say the big desire would be a completely implantable hearing device, both from a hearing aid side as well as the cochlear implant side. And that's something that I would expect to see during my career at some point, but I'm not exactly sure how soon that's going to be. But it would be tremendous to be able to get that type of hearing improvement without having an external piece that we need to be wearing and keeping up with. So that'd probably be the biggest goal.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. That's Dr. Matthew Hurst, an ear, nose, and throat doctor and surgeon who performs cochlear implants here in Maine. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Androscoggin Home Healthcare and Hospice, announcing a new office and expanded services in Augusta. For health, for life. Androscoggin.org. And The Milk House, a Maine dairy farm producing organic whole milk yogurt, available statewide at independent grocers and some Hannafords. Maine Milk House.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who wrote and created the first season of Killing Eve, a darkly comic thriller about a bored intelligence agent and a psychopathic assassin, inexplicably drawn to each other. Waller-Bridge is also the creator and star of Fleabag, about a charming, restless, hedonistic woman living in London. Season 2 begins next Friday. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock right here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public is a media sponsor of the Collins Center for the Arts Chamber Music Series, including a performance by the Boston Trio in the Minsky Recital Hall this Sunday afternoon. Maine Public members are eligible for 15% off tickets to the concert. For more information on the Boston Trio's program and the Maine Public member discount, please visit mainepublic.org and click on Events.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are talking about dealing with hearing loss. Joining me, Terry Morrill, Director of the Division for the Deaf, Hard of Hearing, and Late Deafened, and President of the Maine Association of the Deaf. Missy Graziani, audiologist at Maine Medical Partners and fellow of the American Academy of Audiology. And Kathy Janelle, speech-language pathologist at Hear Me Now. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll go now to Waterville and Ellery. Hi, Ellery. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello, and thank you for the wonderful program, as always. I hear the boom cars coming down my street maybe a quarter of a mile away, and I know I'm cringing with the amount of damage they're doing to the hearing. My question is there one place one can go to, because I don't hear messages on TV or radios or anywhere about hearing loss and safety. Is there any one place one can go for general information on preventing this damage we're causing to ourselves by concerts in the home, loud tools in the basement, and so on and so forth? Where do we go for information?
I can answer that. I think generally OSHA has a lot of good stuff that you can look at if anybody works with them in their job. That's a good place to start. But essentially, you can talk to your audiologist about what is an appropriate amount of noise and what is not. If you've never had a hearing test before but you're around a lot of loud noise, that's a good place to start. But I can give you, for reference, about 100 decibels, maybe about as loud as a really loud lawnmower, safe to be around for about 15 minutes before you start to get some permanent hearing loss. So I think that surprises people when I tell them that. So if you are feeling like something is too loud, you should probably be wearing hearing protection.
What advice do you have for parents of teenagers who love the AirPods and the earbuds? You're all smiling.
You want to take that one? You work with kids a lot.
If you can hear sound coming from their earbuds, it's way too loud. I know, you're making a face. I can't remember the name of the website. Listen to Your Buds, I think it's called, listentoyourbuds.org. But because kids now are wearing them at such a young age and they're having, the sound is right there in going into your ear, that damage can be caused over time, similar to the environmental workplace hearing loss that a lot of people have had from not wearing ear protection. This is going to be from music.
Ellery, thank you so much for your question. We're going to move to John, this is an email. A question for today's broadcast. Are there any remedies for tinnitus? Am I pronouncing it right? My binaural hearing is otherwise good.
Oh, we were actually joking about this question coming up before we started. So,
And tell us, is it pronounced tinnitus?
We say tinnitus only because itis suggests that there's an inflammation of something.
Okay.
And we don't know exactly what, I don't want to say we don't know exactly what the etiology of tinnitus is, because we know it's highly related to hearing loss. So maybe even if you're feeling like your hearing is pretty normal, you may have some damage to your inner ear that is not really detectable on a regular hearing test right now. So there are some instruments in our office that can sort of tease apart maybe if you do have a little bit of damage in your inner ear. There's something called otoacoustic emissions, which is essentially like a integrity test for your ears, and it can show damage in your inner ears before that would show up on a regular hearing test.
And this is when people hear a ringing in their ears, correct?
Ringing, buzzing, hissing, yeah. So
sometimes people hear music.
Sometimes people, occasionally I've had a patient who said she was hearing Christmas carols over and over again. That was a funny one.
Wow.
it's not a funny, not funny ask, if you're the person experiencing
her.
It.
I'm sure.
It's
go ahead, difficult. Terry.
And actually, I experienced tinnitus myself, and it gets severe at times, and it actually can induce migraines. It's not just the ringing. People often assume that there's a cure, and there really isn't. There are some temporary therapies you can do, but there is not a cure yet. And it can be caused from stress. It can be caused from diet. And there is really no way to cure it. There are just, like I said, those temporary therapies. And oftentimes people get a hearing aid and they think their hearing's going to go back to what it was before, but there really is no way to get it back completely. And I think that's a common misconception that probably needs correcting.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting to me you said stress and diet, because in reading up for today's program, I had no idea that one's diet could improve or damage one's hearing. What do you all recommend?
I can say a couple of the big triggers are caffeine, chocolate, and red wine, which is all the fun stuff. So we tell that to patients, and we say, you know, if you think about when the last time your tinnitus was really intrusive, was there anything going on in your day? Did you have a really rough day? Did you have a glass of wine with dinner? Cigarettes can be a trigger as well, so nicotine is tough. I know a lot of kids are vaping nowadays as well, so that on top of, you know, other things going on could also be inducing some ringing in people's ears. So you sort of have to tease apart what the problem is. If your tinnitus is so intrusive that you're not sleeping, you can't concentrate, you're not able to focus on other tasks, you can seek out an audiologist who is a professional with tinnitus retraining therapy. And you can, I know of at least one in the state who's really, really good. And a lot of it is really about counseling and dealing with it.
Joining us on the line now is Deborah Bear Rogers. She is an advocate at Disability Rights Maine Deaf Services, who specializes in communications technology. Thanks for calling in, Deborah.
Thank you for having me. Hello.
Tell me about the kinds of communications technologies available for the hard of hearing.
There are actually quite a few things here in Maine that are available. There's the use of Maine Relay, which is captioning, which can be done through a CapTel phone or through a Sprint IP relay app, which means when we communicate, like if we're talking on the phone now, I'm actually using a CapTel phone and I'm reading what you guys are saying while we're talking on this call. There's also hearing loops, as well as different, somebody mentioned a pocket talker, which can amplify sound. And then captioning is a really big thing for me, being able to read what's being said. If I'm going to a public event and I'm listening to the speaker, but also having live CART and captioning to be able to catch the words I can't hear can be very helpful.
So much these days in our lives is about apps. Are there apps that help the hard of hearing?
There are. There's one that I use quite often. It's called Sprint IP Relay. And that is an app. It's a free app for people who are deaf and hard of hearing and people who also have speech difficulty. They can call through the relay and be reading the captions of what the other person is saying. The relay operator will revoice it, and then I transcribe what I'm saying so that the person, and they revoice it back. So the conversation goes back and forth using a type of text through the app.
I've heard about the recent adoption in Maine of text to 911. Tell me a bit about that and how it works and why it's important.
Yes, of course. I was very excited to have that come here to Maine. Being able to, when somebody has hearing loss or, again, somebody with speech difficulty or deaf and hard of hearing, and being able to pick up their phone, use the text feature, and text 911 and have the conversation go back and forth via text enables them to be able to contact 911 when speaking in a normal situation isn't available on the phone.
All right, Deborah. And if somebody wants to have access to some of the technologies you've been mentioning, where do you recommend they turn?
Oh, come to us. In addition to having hearing loss, I work at Disability Rights Maine. Our website is www.drme.org. We have a telephone equipment program. We also, as we are Maine's protection and advocacy agency for people with all types of disabilities. So a person can contact us and ask some questions. We can provide some resources and assist them.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. That's Deborah Bear Rogers. She's an advocate at Disability Rights Maine Deaf Services. We'll go to Christina calling from Falmouth. Hi, Christina. Go ahead.
Hello. Thank you very much. Quick question. What are the rights of individuals, for example, participating in public events where there's extremely loud music? I've heard this, for example, years ago at my daughter's high school or middle school. The music was so loud, and I've been to Latin dance events. Same thing. It's painful, so I always bring ear protection. But what can be done to protect the general public?
That's a really good question.
That is a good question.
I know personally, I always try to have a pair of earplugs in my bag. I end up going to concerts occasionally. A couple of my friends are in bands, and I carry them with me. But I think it's, they're pennies on the dollar. They should just be more widely available.
So that's what you get, the inexpensive little yellow ones that come a whole bunch to a bag?
Yeah. You know, the roll-down plugs, as long as you're really getting them deeply seated in your ear, they're going to protect you a heck of a lot more than going without anything, certainly.
Okay. Well, Christina, thank you for your call. We'll go to Peggy, who's calling from Palmyra. Hi, Peggy. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a couple of questions. I'm sorry, a couple of suggestions for people who are dealing with those of us like me who are hearing impaired. I tell people, I can't hear you if you turn your back on me. So if we are back with each other, please wait until I turn around, or please turn around before addressing me. And they'll say, oh, sure, yes. And I may have to say that 4 times in an hour because they forget. They just forget. On the phone, you get someone who is a very fast talker, and you will say, please, can you slow down? I'm hearing impaired. And they will say, oh, I'm so sorry. Yes, certainly. And 2 minutes into the call, they're back chattering again. People just don't seem to hold it in their head that they are trying to communicate with someone who's hearing impaired.
Well, Peggy, thank you so much for offering that to the rest of us. Yes, go ahead, Kathy.
She brings up really solid points. And Peggy's what I would call an active communicator. So she lets the people she's talking with know what she needs. And not everybody who has a hearing loss is really comfortable with that. I know Terry was talking earlier about there is an emotional, psychological component to having a hearing loss, and people self-isolate. There's embarrassment involved. There's frustration involved. And not everybody is comfortable and confident enough to do that. And that's some of the work that can happen through counseling or rehabilitation through partners. But it is, communication is a two-way street. There's the talker and the listener. And those roles change as we're talking. And the person with the hearing loss has a responsibility to keep the communication going, to say, hey, I do a lot better if you're looking at me, or if you slow down a little. And then the talker needs to remember that, and if you're a spouse or a partner, to practice it.
And if I can add, if you don't mind.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And often people will misunderstand. They'll think that just because you have a hearing aid, even if your head is turned, that you're still hearing everything. I lip read personally, and it's really important to speak slowly, but not over enunciate. Don't yell. People think that they have to kind of overdo it for us to understand or to lip read, and that's not true. I actually provide a deaf awareness training where we do role playing, and we practice these skills. And it's really important for people to try and correct their habitual behavior, especially when someone is reminding them over and over.
Terry, do you think most people who are deaf lip read as well as you do?
No. And honestly, most people who lip read average to catch about 30%. on the lips. And with training, you know, I practice actively. And I actually force my participants to practice, and I give them, you know, a couple minutes to try and lip read, and they give up much quicker than the time allotted. And, you know, they think, why do people with hearing loss, why are they so fatigued? Why are they so tired? And it's because we have a tremendous amount of stress on our eyes, and our whole day is really centered around what we're seeing, and whether it's lip reading or just watching behaviors between people, facial expressions, it's exhausting, and sign language. And oftentimes the first question a deaf person gets is, do you read lips? And I just discourage people from making that be the first question. That would be like asking a hearing person, do you speak English? You know, people, it's off-putting, and it's an equivalent kind of parallel. So just think of that.
All right. Well, we do need to take another quick break. If you'd like to join this conversation, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Maine Health, a network of hospitals, healthcare providers, and specialists built with your needs at the very center, mainehealth.org. And Healthy Living for Me, a statewide network of classes on topics to maintain health and fitness. Learn more at healthylivingforme.org.
Hello, I'm Mark Vogelsang, CEO here at Maine Public, sharing the news that we've just launched a new strategic plan. And that plan calls for trusted content right at the top. We know you count on us every day for that trusted content. And of course, we all are in a time of real challenges for independent news organizations and journalism in this country. To meet these challenges, Maine Public must remain resolute in the commitment we have to deliver trusted journalism, NPR news, and high-quality information to our listeners. Also in our strategic plan, we're working to expand our classical music network. And we also plan to modernize and align our studios and production space so that Maine Public will be better able to serve you now and into the future. To learn more about our plan, go to strategicplan.mainepublic.org. That's strategicplan.mainepublic.org. Thanks.
Coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock, we'll have World Affairs Council rebuilding the social contract. While globalization has lifted millions out of poverty, the geopolitical forces that drove it have largely left the middle class behind. There is a growing sense that the social contract established after World War II is broken. That's coming up on World Affairs Council in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock, right here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Hearing Loss and Advances in Technology for the Hard of Hearing. Joining me, Missy Graziani, audiologist at Maine Medical Partners, Kathy Janelle, speech-language pathologist with Hear Me Now, and Terry Morrill, president of the Maine Association of the Deaf, speaking with us through an interpreter. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. We want to mention we are videotaping today's program. It will be closed captioned and available later this week. So this will be something that is special for this program, that when people go to the Maine Calling website in the future, they'll be able to watch this conversation and see it closed captioned. Before we go back to the calls, Terry, I know you wanted to talk to us about the resource guide put together by the Department of Labor.
Yes. I work for the Department of Labor, and my division is within them. It's housed within them. I also work through vocational rehab. And we have a resource guide that provides resources all over the state, and it has a tremendous amount of information there. You can contact me. It's terry.l.morell@maine.gov. And I'm happy to share resources if you don't see it in the guide. And I will look further for you to try and find them.
We have an email from Liam. What options are there for adults with an auditory processing disorder?
I can take that one. So for adults with auditory processing disorders, the thing we think about is providing a good signal-to-noise ratio when they're listening to speech. So those people are having the most trouble when they're in situations with a lot of background noise, when they're really far away from somebody who's talking to them, when there's a lot of reverberation in the room. So even if the person doesn't have hearing loss per se. Their brain is not processing the sound. So they're hearing what somebody is saying, but they're not really understanding them. So fitting an adult with mild gain hearing aids is actually really helpful because the microphones on the hearing aids can give you a little bit better access to sound over the background noise. But what Kathy was talking about earlier, remote microphone systems are really helpful, especially if those people are in meetings or going to talks. That gives them better access to the speaker.
We'll go to Joanne calling from Addison. Hi, Joanne. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a couple of very brief things, but the most important one, I believe, is for the audience to know that the cochlear implant does not go into the brain. And the reason why I say this is that our son-in-law, who's early 30s, he lost his hearing when he was around 7, and he never knew, or the family never knew, about that fact, because he just refused to consider it, because he said, I'm not having anybody going into my brain. And as he came into our family, I looked more into it for him, but it's too late. It's too late. He can't, it doesn't go into the brain, but it wouldn't do him any good right now. I do want to say two other quick things. As he returned to Maine, there was a particular business that he wanted to work with that he had worked with prior. And the reason was, quote, they treated him like a human. When he was in the, all right, that, and then this is the third quick quote. When he was working in another state in a factory, he had his wife make a T-shirt that on the back was painted, if you can read this, I can't hear you. And then the last thing is that we, in our home, have a caption phone because of my problem with my hearing. And the other day, I called someone to let them know when the Mexican restaurant in our area was opening. I did not say the name because I couldn't remember it. And when I saw the words coming through on the caption phone, the interpreter had written Fastgas, this difficult Mexican name. And I thought, who is that interpreting? That's all I have to say.
Joanne, thank you so much for your call. I want to go back to your first comment, though, and I don't know, Kathy, if you want to answer this or Missy, but she said that it's too late for her son. Is there a time at which, is there a window of opportunity for cochlear implants?
Like Missy was saying earlier, the sooner that you seek treatment in the form of hearing aids or cochlear implants, the better you will do, because it's our brain that hears. The ears are the doorway into the brain, and there's an auditory nerve, the hearing nerve, that needs to be delivering sound to the brain, and the brain forms around sound, and it needs to stay active. And over time, there's more deterioration that occurs, and Missy can probably speak a little more specifically to that, but your benefits from the devices decrease over time.
Mm-hmm. And I'll add to that. So there are a lot of studies that show length of deafness is really the biggest predictor of how well somebody's going to do with a cochlear implant. So we often get people who maybe had a sudden hearing loss in one ear in, you know, the 80s, and now they're starting to lose their hearing in their only hearing ear, and they don't want to give up that hearing in their better hearing ear. But because their ear hasn't heard on the other side in 30 years, that pathway up to the brain has atrophied. It's like a muscle that you're not using. If you don't use it, you lose it. And when that pathway, even if we tried to implant that person, they may get sound awareness. But your brain has really started ignoring that part of your body, essentially. It's not necessarily going to sound like speech. You may be able to identify, you know, a door closing, or you can tell that somebody's talking, but it's never going to sound clear for them.
Joanne, thank you for your call. An email from Gail. My husband and I often do not hear clearly movies on TV. What options would be available to us to hear more clearly?
Well, This is Terry. I know there is some technology where you can essentially link in your hearing aid to the television or computer. It's almost like a Bluetooth system. And things are not yet completely fully accessible, but captions do provide some access. And like I was saying, I think there are some technologies that involve Bluetooth to do a direct link, essentially a wireless link to your hearing device. So, but things aren't standardized and accessibility is not standardized yet.
And there are others, I think TV ears, that if you're not wearing hearing aids, that can also help.
An email from Tim. My hearing is good, but I'm aware of tinnitus during quiet moments. For me, an effective way of dealing with it is to try actively to hear environmental sounds, like birdsong, wind, or distant traffic. This redirects my attention and brings relief. Well, Tim, thank you for that bit of advice and sharing what you do. An email from Michael. The price of a hearing aid is terrible. It is a rare insurance company that funds a hearing aid, and people with little money cannot buy one. Why should they pay for one, and a month later it does not do a thing to work as needed? How can we get them for less money?
I'll let Terry go first.
Yes, excuse me, sorry. Sometimes there are some insurance companies that provide a discounted rate. If you are working, vocational rehab at times can provide assistance, but it's very important that you are employed. There's now a bill in the legislature, LD 38, to try and encourage insurance companies to need to be required to cover hearing aids. And we're hoping that down the road that is mandatory.
Is that the case in any other states? Are hearing aids covered in other places in the country?
It varies state to state.
And I would.
And however, hearing aid costs can be $300 to $5,000 per hearing aid. It's astounding, and it seems like the type of thing insurance should be covering.
Mm-hmm. Well, go ahead.
I would add to that, too. I know for audiologists in particular, we cannot bill for our professional time. So if you come and see us and we're programming a hearing aid, often the reason why the upfront cost of the hearing aid is so much because you're paying for our services. So when you see somebody who's fitting a hearing aid, you can ask them to just talk to me a little bit more about your pricing. What am I paying for? How much of this is the device versus how often I'm coming to see you? And then I think people have a little bit better perspective on what they're actually paying for, too.
I'll go to Gail calling from Tenants Harbor. Hi, Gail. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted you to know that I went through 40 years of progressive hearing loss, and I finally had my first cochlear implant when I was 66. I had my second one when I was 69, and I am back. I mean, it is the most wonderful thing that could possibly have happened to me. So one is never too old unless there are other physical things that might stop having an implant, but it's fabulous. I have my life back.
Gail, thank you so much for calling, and I'm very happy for you. We'll move on to Larry, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you? I would just mention that I go to school at the university, and since I know what the subject is about, I can frequently hear. But if someone talks to me and I have no idea what they're saying, you know, what they're starting to talk to me about, I can't hear a thing. It's that you can piece together words, and then you finally find out what they're trying to talk about. And then you can start to hear them. And the other thing I would mention is my grandfather always told me, speak slowly and enunciate your words and do not yell. And I can't emphasize the yelling part enough. Don't yell. You can't hear a thing when somebody yells. I can't hear the kids or something. Sometimes they have at school. The kids will sometimes ask me about a piece of music. And I'll say, I don't know. I can't hear it. It's too loud. Which always flabbergasts them, but it's just plain a fact. It's too loud. I can't hear it.
Larry, Terry is nodding as you are talking. He had said this similar thing earlier. I want to go to an email from Paul. I'm wondering if anyone has designed a smart hearing aid using a smartphone and earbuds or headphones that is able to allow more advanced filtering and more personalized modification of sound than a hearing aid normally would.
Ooh, that is a good question, but I think that is a loaded question. I would say there are absolutely hearing aids now that work directly with smartphones. There are some now on the market that just work with Bluetooth Classic, so you can actually pair them to any phone. Doesn't matter. It could be a flip phone, Android, iPhone, doesn't make a difference. As far as the frequency bands go and the kind of personalization of the device, it's really tough because best practice for fitting a hearing aid is seeing how loud that hearing aid is at every frequency band that we can test for. So when we give you that autonomy to play around with the hearing aid yourself, you may be over or under amplifying yourself. So that's the reason why we do real ear measures at our office. So that's what I will say.
An email from Laura. I wonder if you could ask your panel to talk about Maine's newborn hearing program and the importance of early identification. Our four-year-old daughter is deaf, and her hearing loss was identified thanks to newborn hearing screening at the hospital. She now has speech and language skills on par with her typically hearing peers, and early diagnosis, amplification, and enrollment in early intervention services was absolutely critical. Laura, I think you kind of said it all.
She did, didn't she?
Is Maine's newborn hearing program automatic for all children born in the state of Maine and hospitals in the state of Maine?
Children are screened in the hospital. If they refer from that screening, then they go back for a repeat ABR is what it's called, and would be referred into Maine's early intervention system through Child Development Services. But Laura is right. It's critical. If you have a child born with hearing loss and you want a listening and talking outcome, then early amplification, getting fit with hearing aids by a reputable audiologist, wearing those hearing aids full time, getting enrolled in early intervention so that the family themselves learn the best ways, tips and techniques to communicate with their child so that their child can reach that outcome. And if the family wants more of a sign language approach, that's also available through Maine's early intervention system as well.
Well, such a wonderful conversation. I'm sorry it has to come to a close. Thank you all for being here. Terry Morrill is director of Maine's Division for the Deaf, Hard of Hearing, and Late Deafened, and president of the Maine Association of the Deaf. Kathy Janelle, the voice you just heard, speech-language pathologist at Hear Me Now, an expert in early intervention with children. And Missy Graziani, an audiologist at Maine Medical Partners and a fellow of the American Academy of Audiology. Again, a closed caption video of today's show will be available later this week on our webpage. Thank you to Maura Nolan and Grace Cooney for providing sign language interpreting. Nikki Shields ran the board. Isaac Merson produced today's show. Nick Godfrey and Scott McCollum helped us make it happen. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Public Radio.